This is AmericasWebRadio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
Good morning, everyone. Sometimes I wonder if I should just keep on saying welcome to NSPS Radio Hour, because to me it's a weekly thing to do. Maybe we have new listeners, I don't know, but for those who are our normal listeners, thanks for being here again. And for those who may be new, welcome to the show. Always interested to hear from folks, and sometimes we do. And we'll actually take good or bad. Good constructive criticism is a good thing if we hear from that. But we do get a lot of people talking to us. But today I'm welcoming as my ghost, Mr. Bob Miller. Welcome, Bob.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Bob is joining me today in his position as NSPS treasurer. As some of our listeners probably know, we had an election here a while back and elected our new officers for the coming year, and Bob was elected as treasurer. My goal, Bob, I think I mentioned this to you before, my goal had been to get the candidates on for all the positions that were being elected. Unfortunately, I didn't do that. I was only able to get the two guys who were running for president on, which was good. But just as well, now that the elections are over, I'm going to have the opportunity to have our audience meet our other officers with, I believe your term was you would be the guinea pig to start this process. We'll be having in subsequent weeks or perhaps maybe have them both at the same time if that's more, if they're more available that way, the NSPS secretary and the NSPS vice president. We're in a little bit of a new situation this year, I guess entirely new situation actually, in that we've had a bylaws change which took effect in the spring, earlier this spring, when we separated the position of secretary-treasurer in NSPS. Since the beginning of the organization, the secretary-treasurer had been one position. And, Bob, I don't know if you were aware of this, but Trish here in the office and I were talking about that transition a while back. And as it turns out, it's a transition kind of in name, but the truth is, our treasurer never actually operated as secretary other than for official signings. And when I say that, I'm talking about taking minutes and that kind of thing.
Right.
Because when NSPS first began in 1980, Pat Canfield was here in the office. A lot of people may remember Pat's name. And she was a staff person, attended the meetings and recorded everything and took some notes. And this was back in the days, of course, when you had the little cassette tape players, and she would take those things home and spend countless numbers of hours trying to figure out what the heck people were saying to come up with minutes for the meeting. And then when she left and we made some transitions, the secretary of the then Board of Governors, which, as you know, another thing happened in our elections, or when we did voting for bylaws changes, and our Board of Governors has now gone away in favor of the Board of Directors, which is basically the Board of Governors. But in any case, we drafted then, or assigned perhaps is the right word, the Secretary of the Board of Governors to be the recording secretary for the Board of Directors. So in reality, that position of Secretary and Treasurer has pretty much always been the Treasurer position anyway. As it turns out, one of our future guests is going to be Tim Burch, who was the Secretary of the Board of Governors and was elected to the brand new position of NSPS Secretary. So with all of that explanation and introduction, again, Bob, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Yeah, it's quite ironic that Tim Burch actually came on as a governor out of, Illinois?
Illinois, yeah.
About the same time, right after I came on, and we've been pretty good friends all ever since. So we're both in the Great Lakes Council Committee, and in fact, recently he was the chair and I was the vice chair, and we've played golf together already and kept in touch. So it's a little ironic that now we're both in positions on the XCOM. So.
with Bob mentioning the Great Lakes Council, for the audience who may not be familiar with the way the organization has adapted itself to operate, this is not official technically, but there have always been groups of what were then governors, now directors, from various parts of the country who would get together on a regional basis and discuss issues important to their region and then bring those back to NSPS for consideration, first through the Board of Governors and then the Board of Directors, and of course now to the Board of Directors. And that those groups, Bob, to me, have a lot of sentiment in my heart for them, because I came through that area 3-4 group. You know, in the South, we are not creative enough to come up with a name. So we were the areas 3 and 4 in NSPS, which at the time had 10 areas and a director for each area. But those guys back in the early 80s, probably from the very beginning, because I got involved in it, I guess, in end of 86, early 87, and they were already doing this. And they would hold meetings off-site, still do hold meetings off-site, and bring issues back. And some of that has morphed now. That group also meets during the week of our conference, as does the Great Lakes Council and the, what's now called the Western Governors Group, which primarily consists of the states that are in WestVet. But I've always thought that was a great thing that came about, Bob. I don't know what your thoughts are on it in terms of those groups meeting collectively as regions and talking out issues, because it wasn't just about what was going to happen in NSPS. It was really about, and is still, about what's happening in the states.
Right, yeah. I really enjoy those meetings because we talk about, we have round robin issues that we deal with as far as legislation and education and anything else that's happening within those states and those affiliates. And it's funny to hear the similarities of the problems that you're having within that area. I know even talking to people from the western part of the country, it's similar everywhere. But with this group, it's a good thing. I know we have, it's called the Great Lakes Council, and I believe there's quite a few states that don't touch the Great Lakes, but, you know, that's like the Big Ten being, 13 schools now, so.
Right, including Maryland, which is right here next door to us.
That's right, yeah.
So that's certainly an interesting part of all of this, and you're right about the regional groups, and actually what we find is that things are pretty similar anywhere you go in the country in terms of the problems we encounter, the issues we deal with. As a matter of fact, just this morning I got an email from our delegate in Arkansas talking about something that just occurred there last week, I guess, where from the surveyor's perspective in the dark of night, it seems, a new legislative action was approved and put into place where the surveying portion of the state government is now being put under the GIS department, and even with powers of setting rules and regulations and licensing requirements and all those kind of things. Troubling for the surveyors there, and I need to check into it more to find out what all the details are. But those are the kind of things that come up. You know, sometimes they come up in an email overnight, and other times at least you have an opportunity then when we get together to talk those through and see if other people have dealt with us, you know, the same kind of issues.
Yes, and 9 times out of 10 they have.
Oh, yeah.
When
yeah.
Something's brought up, it creates a storm of emails coming in from all over the country with people
yeah.
having similar situations.
Absolutely. And, you know, whether it's something that comes up somebody feels is an encroachment on the practice or just a, you know, a regulation that comes up and people want to know if that's something that has occurred. And even that list of state laws that we've compiled and hold together and, you know, complete it as well as we can from the information we get. All of that information is valuable. I know the one thing, I think I've talked about this on the show before, the whole statute of repose thing versus limitation, people confuse those things. Limitation basically is a certain amount of time on which somebody can file suit against a surveyor after some perceived error is discovered, repose being some period of time after the end, when the work is complete. and a lot of states have got the Repose Act now, and just sharing of information back and forth, I think, has been helpful in that regard because people can see what other folks have done. I don't know, do you guys have that in PA, Repose?
Yeah, we have both. And I think, actually, there's – is there something on the web – on the NSPS website that discusses every state? It's a chart that shows every state's –
Yeah, we have those charts. I'm trying to think if we actually have it linked on the website. I think we do, but I know we have a chart of the state laws. That we continually add to as new things happen. But, again, I think that's part of the beauty of the organization is it gives us that opportunity to reach out to friends, really. And that's, you know, to me, that's always been the greatest part of participating is you create so many friends who are professionals in other states that you can turn to.
Well, it's also a good conduit for anybody that wants to, that needs to find out anything in another state, or you know, if they have a project that they're going to in another state, they want to find something out, they want to talk to surveyors in that area. It's a good way to go to get through a contact,
and even to build alliances,
right?
And to, I know that. That helped my practice a lot when I was still practicing. I knew people in a lot of different parts of the country, and so if I had clients who had national reach, I could say, I know this person and somebody you can trust, and that means a lot.
Yes, it does.
So we are looking forward to moving ahead, and we'll, I don't know how much we want or need to discuss the treasurer's position. Basically, it is you're in charge of all the money, right?
That's it, yes. And... Yeah, I'm in charge of the money. We have a good accountant in Bob Jupin that takes care of things on a daily basis, and everything any transaction he deals with, I get a copy of and I approve, and it's working pretty smoothly. We keep track of everything, so we have a double set of standards for checking between myself and him. And I look forward to diving into it a little more and see if there's any more monies that we can save through the organization.
Yeah, certainly that allocation of our resources is an important element in what we do and in just doing the day-to-day operation, but then trying to find ways to use that revenue to benefit our members and our profession, which is what we're all about.
Yep.
Well, we're here 30 seconds away from our first break. So we'll get over to that break here in a few seconds, and we'll come back, and I want to pick up on some of Bob's history. I always want our membership to know who our leaders are and that what their background is and everything. So when we come back, we'll get into that, Bob, and let you share that with the audience.
Okay.
Want to know if your Schonstedt locator is still under warranty? Go to Schonstedt.com and click on Warranty Finder in the lower left-hand corner. Enter your 6-digit serial number, and it will tell you everything you need to know. Out of warranty? Click on Repair Department. But here's a tip. Before sending it in, pick up a $25 discount by going to Specials and Sales under the Buy Now tab at www.schonstedt.com.
With all the back and forth in today's politics, it seems as though the Constitution gets lost in the mix. If you want to brush up on your Constitution, then join Michael Conley every Wednesday from 4 to 5 p.m. for the show Our Constitution on AmericasWebRadio.com.
Quick Stakes is your answer to staking. Lightweight, easy to ride on, easy to use, easy to find, and won't break your back carrying them like the old-fashioned wooden stakes. Have you tried a sample? If not, get a pen and paper and write down this number, 800-438-0387, or go to quickstake.com, that's QUIKSTAKE.com, and order your samples. Ask your surveying supply dealer for Quick Stakes today.
Getting into underground utility location? If so, you'll want to know about the Schonstedt Instrument Company's MPC kit, a multi-purpose combo for locating both ferrous objects and underground pipes and cables. And because it consists of two instruments in one package, it qualifies for trade-in allowances on two locators. Any kind, any make, any condition. Contact your dealer for details. or visit www.seanstedt.com. That's S-C-H-O-N-S-T-E-D-T.com.
You're listening to AmericasWebRadio.com, the pioneer and leader in chat radio. Thank you for listening.
We're back on NSPS Radio Hour with Bob Miller, our NSPS treasurer. And just for a little bit of background on the treasurer position, Bob, I know you've had some experience in other groups with doing some of that kind of work, and I don't know what responsibilities you may have at work for that, but I know you've had some experience otherwise.
Oh, yes. Well, first of all, at work, I've been running the survey department for almost eight years, but the last four, basically, I've taken over the department as far as making all my financials work. I take care of the salaries. I bring in, I take care of the monies in and the monies out, and make a profit, hopefully. I'm well on my way there. As far as other organizations, I was in charge of the church that I belong to. I was in charge of the bingo program there for about 8 years, and it was quite a lucrative program in that they brought in about $60,000 a year.
Wow.
So that was, unfortunately, the priest decided to, with good reason, decided to stop the bingo because we found out that the majority of the people coming in there were dropping their Social Security checks at the door.
Oh.
So it wasn't a feel-good thing to see that happening. So, but did that, and I was also treasurer of the chapter of Pennsylvania Society of Land Surveyors that I belonged to quite a while ago, and a few other things along the way.
So it kind of sounds like the way you described your company and your department, it's almost like your sections of the company or departments in the company sort of independent. They have their own budgets and that kind of thing.
Yeah. We work together, but I'm left to make it or break it, I guess you could say, and we're doing quite well right now.
So. That's great. It's good to hear people say that, isn't it? After
yes.
A little bit of a tough time there for a while, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of your bingo experience, maybe this is a good opportunity for you to pitch the foundation thing.
Yes, it's great. As a member of NSPS, being the directors, we were asked to join committees, and right from the start, I got involved with the TrigStar program. In fact, I got into TrigStar first and then rolled into a governorship from there. And when I was with TrigStar, I found that there was a liaison between the TrigStar and the NSPS Foundation, basically because the funds for the TrigStar program go into the foundation. So I fell into that position, and I've enjoyed that for about 4 years, and they needed somebody to do some fundraising, because basically we've been taking the monies that come in to start a scholarship are taken from somebody starts a scholarship, an organization or whatever, and they donate the money to begin the scholarship, and sometimes they rebuild that scholarship, and sometimes it just runs out. So with some of that going on for quite a while, there was no money coming in, and they decided we need a fundraiser. And I said I would try to do a fundraiser. So what we've come up with, and we just unveiled this at the April meetings, we are running a raffle. It's for a cruise. The raffle is unique in that the tickets are $100. However, we're only selling 300 tickets. And you have a choice of three cruises if you win. Each cruise is worth approximately $8,000 for a couple. One cruise is Alaska, where you spend the first 3 days at Denali State Park, and then from there you take the cruise down through the fjords and glaciers and end in Vancouver. Another one of the cruises is the Danube, and it starts in Budapest and runs to, I believe, Nuremberg, and goes past all the castles along the way, a lot of wine stops and that sort of thing. And the third cruise starts in Rome and goes through the Mediterranean and ends in Barcelona. That's my favorite. with stops along the way also. And I think it'll be a good program. In fact, at this point, we've been selling the tickets for about a month and a half, and so far we've sold 40. So there's ways through the website. I know there's an advertisement that has to get out there. I wanted to get it out into the magazines next to push this. But anybody would like to buy a ticket, just give a call to headquarters, and I'm sure they'll get a hold of me.
What's the date?
It's set up for the summer of 2016. The summer of 2016.
So will the drawing be like at our spring meeting next year or something? Or?
No, the drawing is going to be this September.
It's going to
be at our September or our it's October.
Our fall
first
meeting,
week in October. That's when the drawing will be.
Okay.
Because they need to know ahead of time to make the arrangements. Now, it starts the end of June and goes through to the beginning of August that you can choose those dates. However, everything is negotiable. If you decide on one of those cruises, you can always work out something with the travel agent if you want to stay longer in the beginning or the end, or if you want to go at a different time. I think they'll be accommodating for that sort of thing.
So I guess an auction, or if that's the right word, not an auction, but a ticket purchase for scholarships for a trip, one of those fantastic-sounding trips you had in today's society, I guess, is more palatable than the old days when they auctioned off or raffled off guns.
Yeah, that's true. I know.
A few years back in the day when that was actually, it was a pretty big seller, to tell you the truth.
Yeah, would be, but there's a lot of people that wouldn't
participate. And that's fine. But this is pretty exciting, though. I think this is the first time the foundation's done anything quite like this, I think.
Yeah, it's different. And having started everything and tried to put all the details together, and then the last meeting, or I guess it was in the fall meetings, we decided to go with the 100 or the 300 tickets. I was apprehensive at first, but the more they talked about it, the more it was, well, we need the money to help with the scholarships for the kids, and we need to get a sure thing. And it seemed like a better opportunity to do it like this than just to have an open raffle, because you can have an open raffle for a $10 or a $20 ticket and sell 2,000 tickets, and you're not going to be guaranteed a good amount of money to go towards the scholarships. With this, I think if everybody does their job, there shouldn't be a problem selling the 300, and we know we'll have good monies to put out more scholarships.
Yeah, and those are such an important element of the profession, always has been, but certainly in today's world it is, to support scholarships, without a doubt. I don't know if I told you, I know I've talked to Joe Dolan about this at the foundation, but we were contacted a while back, probably almost a year ago now, that a lady out in California had passed away some time ago, and in her will she left some money to go for scholarships to what was then ACSM. Of course, that was transferred into NSPS, and I just got contacted by the attorney recently that thing is drawing closer and closer and closer. And so it's going to be a pretty substantial amount of money to put into the scholarship fund, and I'm thrilled about that.
That's great.
And, of course, the scholarship will be in the lady's name, which is the right thing to do. But it's just so critical to reach out to students. I know you and I were talking earlier today when we were chatting about the show, and we probably won't finish this conversation before the break's over, but just how important it is to reach into the schools. And I know in the Pennsylvania Society, you guys have a fantastic relationship with the program at Penn State Wilkes-Barre, and we were talking about leadership and new leadership and the fact, you know, everybody talks about the age of the surveyor and all that kind of thing, but I think we agreed that the whole scholarship program to get youngsters interested in the societies as well as just their education is important.
Yes.
You guys have had some leadership transition there that's quite envious, I think, in terms of getting young membership in, because a lot of times I go to the state societies and I'm looking at all the leaders are my age or close to my age.
And I guess in our conversation earlier, what I had said was the fact that when I got involved in NSPS, which was, I mean, in PSLS, the state society, that was back in about 79 or 80, I was, you know, I was just a member for a while. In fact, the company that I worked for, the president was also the president of PSLS at that time, and that's how I got involved. But from there, we went on, I went on to get involved in the organization, first as treasurer, actually, of the chapter, and then moved on to the state, and in 1997, I was state president. And at that time, I was, well, I know at one point I was about 50 years old on the board, and everyone was older than me.
Yeah.
And everybody was concerned that the average age of surveyors is 52. And at this time, I'm now, as the NSPS governor on the board, I'm the oldest member, and the average age is about 40 years old. In fact, we have two members, the president and the vice president, are both actually scholarship recipients from PSLS, and now they're serving the state, which is great.
Yeah, that's just really amazing, and we're close to the second break here, so maybe we can pick up on this when we come back. But I do want to focus a little bit more on how important it is to support our educational system, because to develop those young professionals, but also leaders for our societies. So we're going to go to break, and we'll be back in a couple minutes.
Want to know if your Schonstedt locator is still under warranty? Go to Schonstedt.com and click on Warranty Finder in the lower left-hand corner. Enter your 6-digit serial number, and it will tell you everything you need to know. Out of warranty? Click on Repair Department. But here's a tip. Before sending it in, pick up a $25 discount by going to Specials and Sales under the Buy Now tab at www.schonstedt.com.
Did you miss a show that you really wanted to hear? All of our programs are available for download on AmericasWebRadio.com and on iTunes. You can listen to your favorite programs on AmericasWebRadio.com anytime you like.
Quick Stakes is your answer to staking. Lightweight, easy to ride on, easy to use, easy to find, and won't break your back carrying them like the old-fashioned wooden stakes. Have you tried a sample? If not, get a pen and paper and write down this number, 800-438-0387, or go to quickstake.com, that's QUIKSTAKE.com, and order your samples. Ask your surveying supply dealer for Quick Stakes today.
Did you miss a show that you really wanted to hear? All of our programs are available for download on AmericasWebRadio.com and on iTunes. You can listen to your favorite programs on AmericasWebRadio.com anytime you like.
Attention, surveyors. Are you aware that yellow stick you're using is saving lives all over the world? Yes, that Pinfinder is clearing fields and villages of unexploded cluster bombs and other hidden explosives in over 25 countries. Schonstedt, in cooperation with international mine action programs, provides free locators to where they are most urgently needed. To find out how you can help, visit the NSPS website at nsps.us.com. And thank you.
You're listening to americaswebradio.com, the pioneer and leader in chat radio. Thank you for listening.
We're back for our next segment with Bob Miller today. And before we went to break, Bob, we were talking about the leadership in our societies. And I don't know how commonplace what you guys in Pennsylvania have been able to do is across the rest of the country in terms of getting new people involved. And I've seen some of that, you know, some of the states where there are younger people in the upper level of leadership, but clearly we need to encourage those folks. And, you know, one of the things we talked about earlier with the whole thing about the schooling and the age of people when they get into leadership, and I mentioned then, I believe part of that has to do with people coming into the profession through the educational programs when they're in their early 20s as licensees, or at least having had the first part of the exam, versus other, you know, folks in my era who were probably close to 40 or more before they ever came into the society.
That's right. Yeah. I know I came in, I was about 30, I guess. Yeah. Yeah, we're very fortunate in Pennsylvania with the Penn State University. They have done a great job as far as, of course, a lot of it is recruiting for their program, but they still are widely represented. We have an education committee in the state society that is represented by three professors or retired professors from Penn State. So the push and the drive is always there. The students are always told about Penn State. There's a student chapter. They participate in our state conference. They're there to help us to actually work in all the workshop rooms. So, you know, something like that really does foster a good relationship with the younger surveyors.
Yeah, I was able to go up. I think it was last fall, Brian invited me up to speak to the students one day, and I drove up. Actually, drove up and back the same day. But I was very impressed with the school and with the students, the whole program, as I am with the other programs around the country that I get to participate in. There's just so much energy among those young people.
Yeah.
And they can see way further down to the road than we can in terms of all the possibilities for things they're learning that didn't exist when you and I were coming along. So
that's right. Well,
but it is very interesting. Speaking of history, by the way, how did you get into surveying? Are you like most of the rest of us? Somebody either handed you an application and said, "Fill this out," or good friend of mine who's really good surveyor and for your graduate in Georgia became interested in surveying because he was working in a convenience store, and these guys came by every morning in their truck and bought stuff, and he thought it'd be really cool to go out where they were, and then he ended up deciding he needed to go to school. But
right now, actually, it was back in 1971, and I went to a state school, California State, below Pittsburgh, as a math major, and I wanted to get into computer science, which at that time was a blossoming profession. If I would have stayed in that, I could kick myself sometimes. But at the time, I had two brother-in-laws that were both surveyors. One was director of surveying at an engineering firm in Reading, and the other had just got back from Vietnam and served as a surveyor over there and was working for the Game Commission. So I got to work one summer with the sergeant from Vietnam, and it was a little rough, but it was exciting, and I went to school then, and I found myself more and more thinking about not staying there because I really liked the math and I liked working outside, and I thought that was a good opportunity. And it was at that time that my father passed away from cancer, so my mom was home alone, and I went after my first year of college, I went home, and I never went back to school. I became my one brother-in-law had asked me if I wanted to join their company. I had a skiing accident, was in a cast up to my thigh, and he said, while you're in your cast, we'll show you how to draft, and when you're done, you'll go out on a survey crew. And that's when it all started. And by 79, I got my license. So if I could do it all over again, it would change, because when I first got into the surveying, the companies I worked for were people that didn't have anyone pushing the education of surveying. And I would love to be a teacher at a university. I just really enjoy teaching. I do a lot of workshops, and I have fun doing it. And too late now. I'm in a good position here, and I'm satisfied. But it's something I always thought, yeah, I wish I would have had somebody telling me about it.
Well, between skiing, golfing, and bikes, you stay busy all the time.
That's right. Well, the golf, there's a little side story there. My what I did for years was, I wasn't in sports. I played drums since I was 8 years old. And when I was 16, I got in a, besides being in the band, I got in a drama bugle corps. And I played in that from 1969 until 1975. And then I got back in 82 and 83. Then we decided to have a family, and because I was a drummer, I never had the opportunity to play in sports. So for 15 years, I coached soccer, hockey, and baseball. And in fact, baseball rolled into coaching at the junior high level for 4 years. So I got that out, and then I got back into drumming in the alumni. So I'm still doing that. In fact, I had a parade yesterday. So
cool.
There's my history.
Yeah. And I know you like bikes, or you did. Are you still riding any?
No, that's not me. The only time I ride a bike is when I go to the shore because it's flat. I am running in 5Ks, though. Unfortunately, I have diabetes, and I wanted to control it, so I got into running and exercise, and I'm controlling it. So
now, I know one of your sons, I don't know if you have more than one son, but one of your sons is actually working in the golf side of things, right?
Yes, I should promote both my sons. My one son actually went to Penn State in the geography department and has a degree in GIS, and he works for a company up in southeast Pennsylvania. And my other son, when I was doing all that coaching, my youngest son got into baseball to the point where he played 100 games before July 1st and said, "Dad, I'm burnt out." Now, this is when he was 12. And he wanted to try golf. He went out one time and shot above 100. It came as a natural. He made me sick. to this day, well, he ended up going to Penn State for the professional golf management degree. And he is now assistant pro at a course in near Philadelphia, and has a 1.2 handicap. And I tell everybody I taught him everything I know and forgot. So, but he's doing well.
I only had one handicap with golf. It was no talent. But our listeners may be wondering why we're focusing on this discussion the way we are. But one of the things I want to do with this show, when I talk with you and I talk with the other two guys, is it seems to me, this has always kind of been the case, it seems to me, as I've worked through state societies and regional societies and national society, somehow people tend to think that folks in leadership are not regular people. But we are.
Yeah.
And
about as regular as you can get.
And I just think it's so important to share this kind of information with each other and talk about life and the profession and the fact that the real leaders come from people who are just doing the work like everybody else. It's not any special group of people. It's special in the sense that we're willing to serve, but certainly no different from every other practitioner, really. Yeah. So in terms of, well, we talked about your association activities, and I guess we're a couple of minutes away from our last break, and when we come back, I want to have you talk a little bit about your thoughts on NSPS itself and where we have come, what our transition has been, particularly over the last few years, and what's our strategy moving forward. And maybe among those things we'll get back and even talk about Trigstar a little bit. You mentioned Trigstar earlier. I always like to promote Trigstar because sometimes people tend to think it isn't a worthwhile endeavor, but it truly is. And I know you were involved in it and maybe still so to some degree. We're right now in the process of trying to get all the state winners in to get the national competition going for this year. And it's a really important program, I think.
Oh, yeah. I enjoy it, and I think it's a great opportunity.
It absolutely is. I think we're on target to be somewhere in the low to mid-30s in the number of states that will be participating in the national this time.
No, so that's good. I know. I had 15 schools participate, and I am still doing a lot of. I think I had help on 6 schools. The rest I did myself. So between that and the treasurer, it was a very, very busy spring here, but it's all worth it.
Right, and it seems to me oftentimes when the difficulty in making Trigstar work, I don't believe is in convincing teachers to participate, because I get calls and emails from people all the time who sometimes themselves have been contacted by a teacher and ask if they could set up Trigstar because they had learned about it somehow.
Well, there's a lot of things that have to go and fall into place to get it going good, because you need help. I know I've tried to do it mostly myself, and actually this year I had help because a retired math teacher decided to help us do Trigstar, which I wish that would happen in a lot of states, and maybe it does, but he understood the opportunity his kids had, and you know, he pushed it to the point where it was a third of their grade.
And oh, wow.
When the Trigstar scores came in from that school, the average was way above all the others. So you knew there was more time spent on that subject.
Yeah, I think we nationally need to do a better job, too, of advertising. You were talking about scholarships earlier. The Trigstar scholarship, I think, is just a fantastic thing.
Right.
Being able to get kids involved and thinking about it, and more kids competing for it. And we only had one application last year, so it'd be great if we could have more from some seniors this year who've been involved in Trigstar.
Right.
So, well, we are 10 seconds away from our third break, so we will come back and then have you share some of your thoughts about where we are and how we got here and where we're headed. So we'll be right back.
Schonstedt Instrument Company has been making locating easier since 1953, first with its yellow stick, the GA52CX, the industry standard for sensitivity, then the GA72CD, a shorter and more rugged version offering a magnetic polarity display and a battery and sensitivity indicator, and most recently, the GA92XT, built for portability. It retracts to fit in its holster and extends for one-handed operation and fingertip control. See them all at Schonstedt.com. That's Schonstedt.com.
Whether cruising the strip in a 57 Chevy or taking the family on a vacation in a 71 Oldsmobile Vista Cruiser, you need to tune in to Classic Cars with Steve Ronaldo and Jim Weber every Saturday from 8 to 9 a.m. on AmericasWebRadio.com.
Quick Stakes is your answer to staking. Lightweight, easy to ride on, easy to use, easy to find, and won't break your back carrying them like the old-fashioned wooden stakes. Have you tried a sample? If not, get a pen and paper and write down this number, 800-438-0387 or go to quickstake.com. That's QUIKSTAKE.com and order your samples. Ask your surveying supply dealer for Quickstakes today.
Want to know if your Schonstedt locator is still under warranty? Go to Schonstedt.com and click on Warranty Finder in the lower left-hand corner. Enter your six-digit serial number, and it will tell you everything you need to know. Out of warranty? Click on Repair Department. But here's a tip. Before sending it in, pick up a $25 discount by going to Specials and Sales under the Buy Now tab at www.schonstedt.com.
You're listening to AmericasWebRadio.com, the pioneer and leader in chat radio. Thank you for listening.
And we're back with Bob Miller for our final segment today. And we normally get caught up in conversation so much at the end, Bob, I never have time to adequately thank people for coming on. But I especially want to thank you because, as we mentioned earlier in the show, you agreed to be the guinea pig among the three folks I'm going to have on the show and on really short notice. So that I really appreciate you doing that, and I know our audience does too, because I think it's important for our listeners, particularly our members, to hear about the society and the people who we depend on to make things run smoothly and get to know them as people, not just as some elected official. I'm thinking, you know, moving forward on the way we do elections,
mm-hmm.
I'm trying to figure out a better way to introduce our candidates to the people as we move forward, and I'm wondering, I think there must be some way we can do that through better use of our website, or maybe even have the participants be on a not a webinar, but whatever you call that face-to-face thing, you know, where
right.
people can actually see you. Because it's amazing, even though we did an electronic election this time, percentage-wise, we didn't have any more people than before.
I know. That's something that we have to change.
And I think some of that has to do with people just not – I mean, I actually got a letter from a guy who said, sorry, I didn't vote. I didn't feel qualified to vote because I didn't know anything about the people. So we need to fix that. And I haven't figured out exactly how to do that yet, but I think we do need to do it.
Well, maybe we can do something at the director's level where as we come through, I don't know if it needs an ad hoc committee or not, but where we can come up with a questionnaire that or something of that nature that we can ask the directors, what would you want to know, or what do you think your constituents would want to know about these individuals? And then instead of each of us putting together a blurb for the ballot, we actually have a write-up of one or two pages based on what people want to know about us.
Yeah, that's a great idea, and we could actually put that right on the website.
Right.
And people could go to that, and that's a really good idea. That way,
and
it's sort of a level playing field, so to speak.
Everybody is busy, and I think we understand that as much as anybody else, so somehow we have to make it as easy as possible for people to be able to make that decision. You're dealing with a national organization. It's impossible to get to know everybody the way they would feel comfortable, but we are representing them, and that has, I mean, I vote for some politicians in the area that I don't know a whole lot about, and I have to read up on them, too. So
yep.
It's just something that has to be done.
Yeah, I agree with that, and with the success we've had with the joint membership program, of course, that just, instead of a few thousand people, now we're looking at 16,000 people, so it's just not possible to have a direct relationship with all of them. But I like your idea, though. That's a really good idea, and I'll continue.
Well, speaking of the 100% program, I think being a director when we decided we were going in that direction, made me a much stronger person when it comes to being a director, representing your people, representing them for legislation and education and public relations. Just in being an NSPS spokesman, I had to do that to push that to our society. There was very, you know, there were a lot of doubters. When I started that, it was about 40% positive and 60% negative, and I had to turn that around. I had to show them what NSPS does for you. And even when they, you know, there was a lot of negativity and a lot of people that were against this, and I did sway quite a few, and there were a couple when we went to vote finally. I think we had 35 people that were voting as directors of the different chapters, 16 chapters. And having left all the surveyors that are members voice their opposition or whatever, or their concerns, the vote came down to two people out of the 35 that voted no. And it took a lot of work, and I think that has to continue. I mean, after the first year, they wanted to re-vote to make sure everybody still wanted to maintain this, because it was an added cost for the, you know, the dues structure. And they voted okay. But we have to always, and this goes on to the national level, and that's what I would want to make sure I maintain as a person on the XCOM, that we do constantly let our members know what's going on and how we're doing things. With almost everything we do is with those members in mind and the surveying profession in mind, and this is what we have to make sure we maintain, that information base.
Yeah, I certainly agree with that, and I think we need to find better ways to get more people involved in some of the committee work that we do. And I know that's difficult because people are scattered all over the place. But, you know, I look at the TreeStar committee in particular, and it's got members from across the country on it, although it's a relatively small committee. But so many good things can come out of the committee work. And I know there's some work being done right now to look at the committee structures in terms of can we combine things and all that type of thing. But getting more people engaged, I think, builds their sense of belonging, the sense of being part of something.
Yeah, the members have to understand they all can participate in any committee. And more of the committees are on conference calls. So it's not like you have to participate and go somewhere. It's like you have to put out an hour of your time, such as what we're doing today, to get together and talk about ideas and then make some assignments for the next meeting. And you may only meet 4 to 6 times a year, maybe one time face-to-face. But that's all it takes. So anybody can really get involved if they want to.
Right, absolutely. And there's so many things to be involved in that people don't necessarily know about. And that's not their fault. It's ours. You know, anything from ABET to Boy Scouts to TreeStar, you name it. There's so many things going on.
Right.
And then, of course, the foundation does such good work, too. And finding people to be involved there. Of course, we have the board, but still there's room for people to participate and what the foundation is doing, no question about that. And of course, we've got our bylaws changes. I don't know if we're done with those yet, to tell you the truth. I think I've talked about this on the show a time or two before, but the transition from where we were to where we are now with 47 states and the District of Columbia and the joint membership program has made us do some really diligent work, and I have to give a lot of credit to Wayne Harrison in particular, but Wayne and his whole group, Bob Don, those folks, of working on those bylaws changes to fit what we are today.
Right.
But there's always something to be tweaked.
Oh, always.
So we got 3 minutes or so left. I don't know if there's any particular thing you want to share with folks that we haven't talked about, but I want to give you that opportunity if you do.
Okay. Not offhand, I would just reiterate that the involvement, everybody has to get involved, and I think as far as what's coming in the future with the with what I'm doing as far as treasurer and the ExCom committee, we're just going to try to maintain focus on making better legislative issues and better pass better bills, keep on track of anything that could be negative to the profession. We have to, you know, make sure that we get word out there to the public, to the teachers, to the, you know, the upcoming surveyors, to push that, and it comes in education and public relations. People have to know. We have to portray ourselves as better professionals. That's always a job, and it's getting better. So that's all the things that we really have to do, and, of course, I have to make sure the budget's balanced.
And that's always a fun thing to do.
Yes.
And make sure we spend our money wisely, and we don't ever want to be in a position where we're running toward deficits or anything like that.
Right.
There's so darn many things to do. I mean, obviously, we wish you had tons of money to do all the things that really need to be done. But I think with leadership like yours and keeping us on level playing ground, so to speak, with what we do, we're still able to accomplish a lot of good things.
Right.
Well, I want to thank you for volunteering to be on the show today, and I'm glad that we had the opportunity to get you better introduced to our membership as we move forward, and I'm looking forward to the other guys being on the show as well. As we're struggling to look at the things we need to do, I just want to ask to tell everybody in the audience, we really do want to hear from you. We sometimes get caught up in our own world of understanding what the organization does. I'm not sure we really portray that out to people as much as we should, because we're thinking, well, gee, this is old hat. Everybody's heard about this. So I do think we need to do a better job of that. But by the same token, I always want to hear from people, whether it's an issue that's troubling them or just some idea about things we can do to enhance the profession and promote the profession and get more people involved in it. That's a big challenge these days. I guess one of the things, Bob, I don't know how you feel about this. We've only got 30 seconds left, but I'm not sure how many surveyors we need in the future with all the new equipment and everything we got, but whatever that number is, it's not a small number, so we still need a lot of people.
Yeah, I know. I have to push this. When I do the TrigStar program and I go to the schools, I'm talking about the need for surveyors, and I know it's tough because I'm talking about the technology has advanced so much that we're trying to, we have to keep busy. I have to find 60% more work.
I hate to cut our conversation off, Bob, but we've run out of time.
Okay.
I'm sorry, but I do appreciate you being with me today. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Take care.
You're listening to AmericasWebRadio.com, the pioneer and leader in chat radio. Thank you for listening.